Dogs seem to know everything about their owners, from their schedules to their scents to exactly what annoys us, or is that just you? I don't know. So shouldn't humans know everything about their dogs? Well, Embark's dog DNA test allows you to do just that. Getting to know your dog's breed mix and genetic health risks with Embark means strengthening your bond with your furry friend. And Embark founded the world's first canine relative finder. I have actually found distant cousins of Geo's. Anyway, we'll get there. They even offer you the ability to connect directly with other Embark dog owners in their database. We'd like to thank EmbarkVet.com for supporting And That's Why We Drink. And you can go to EmbarkVet.com to get free shipping and save $50 on the breed and health test with promo code DRINK. So Geo is quite a situation. All right, I got the Embark test done, and he is American Pit Bull Terrier. He is Shih Tzu. He's Australian Cattle Dog, Dachshund Chow Chow, German Shepherd, and Labrador Retriever. He is, as by the way, Embark put it, which made me so happy, he is a super mutt. Isn't that nice? I was thrilled because I had done a test on him ages ago, but it was like pretty simple and like kind of just not very, very in-depth. This Embark test was amazing. It told us that he was part Dachshund, which made a lot of sense because he's kind of like hot dog shaped. Get the dog DNA test that is trusted by millions. Right now, Embark has a limited time offer on their breed and health test for our listeners. Go to EmbarkVet.com to get free shipping and save $50 with promo code DRINK. Visit EmbarkVet.com and use promo code DRINK to save $50 today. We all love to treat ourselves every now and then, right? Like go out and buy a nice coffee, maybe get a little extra legroom on the plane. Then why are we always settling for doctors? Your health is the most important thing. That's where ZocDoc comes in. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. You know how I feel about making phone calls, and that is why I discovered ZocDoc many years ago before I even had a podcast. And so I'm thrilled. This feels very full circle. I use ZocDoc all the time in LA. I still use them here in Cincinnati. It's just such a cool service to be able to put in your insurance and find a doctor for whatever your ailment might be. I actually found an ENT doctor once when I had this sinus infection, probably TMI. But anyway, I love ZocDoc. I've loved it for years. And the typical wait time to see a doctor booked on ZocDoc is between just 24 to 72 hours. That's how easy it is. Sometimes they even have same day appointments. I know I've gotten some in the past. Go to ZocDoc.com/drink and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/drink. ZocDoc.com/drink. Hi, Em. Do you miss me? Or are you like, I'm so glad you're gone? You're taking way too long to answer this question.
Yes, miss you. I am mad at your baby, so.
You are what?
I'm mad at the baby.
Oh, yeah. I mean, aren't we all at this point?
Tell the folks what I had to hear.
Listen, everybody, I mean, Em's going to probably tell it better because they're more emotionally distraught about it.
I feel like you're more emotionally invested though. So well, maybe that's tell fair.
We had a little bit of a, I mean, this is not a joke. Em literally canceled their flight. It was Sunday and Em was scheduled to fly home. And all of a sudden that morning I started having contractions and they were like, back to back to back to back. And
I was like, are you fucking kidding me? The second I'm about to, literally, I was like, what? I had to be at the airport by 3 and at 2:50 I canceled my flight.
You were like, well, Christine, we have to leave in an hour. What are we doing? And I was like, shit, I gotta like make up my mind now. And I was like, Em, you can leave. And I was like, if this baby's coming tonight, I'm not leaving. Like, I'll be here. And I was like, well, I don't know. I just felt terrible. And then we went to the hospital because I was like, well, they're every 2 to 3 minutes. Like, they felt pretty intense. Like, I don't know. That's just what the internet and your providers tell you is like, once they're 5 minutes, you know, and Em kept doing the quote from The Office, like 5 to 7 minutes. And
well, also Christine's were like at like 4 minutes. Some of them were at 2 minutes. And also she has such a high pain tolerance that when she said, I think we should go to the hospital, I was like, oh, the baby's going to be here in a hot second.
I really worked myself up. And then of course, being me and being impatient, I was like, well, no, this has to be it. There's no question. Like, I'm just going to decide it right now. So we went to the hospital and they were like, well, you're on the way, but like, you're not quite there yet. And they sent us home and it was so disappointing.
I had taken a picture of Christine and Blaze as like their last family pic of them. Yep. It was just the two of them, and I plan on having a whole sleepover with Geo and walking him around and feeding him dinner and taking care of the house.
Big plans we had.
Also, you missed out on some really delicious mac and cheese, Christine, because my original plan. Okay, so my mom always told me that if someone you know is like about to have a baby, if you are in their area or staying with them or something, aww, the nicest thing you can do is like get rid of the other things that would be on their mind. Like no one wants to push out a baby and then come home to dishes in the sink.
Right.
And so I like a plan on like, oh, I'm going to be here all by myself all night. I'm going to like have like Instacart send over a bunch of stuff. I'm going to make them some casseroles. I'm going to clean their house for them. And as I was about to put in the Instacart order, you said, I'm coming home. And I went, so she's just not going to get any
I should have waited like 20 more minutes to tell you.
Really like a good 90 minutes. You would have had a hot, fresh mac and cheese to walk home into. So.
It was such a disappointment. Oh, well. I know. And it was a few days ago. So then Em finally did leave. And now we've been convinced that like the moment Em leaves, the baby's going to be like, tricked ya and show up. But I'm 39 weeks. I went to the doctor today and she was like, or the midwife, and she was like, all right, you're chugging along. It could be any day now, any minute now. And I was like, oh my God. So I'm once again having contractions, but I guess I'm in prodromal labor, fun facts, everybody, which is apparently a super fun thing that happens where you're just kind of in labor for days to weeks with
it's already weeks I'm pretty sure
it's been weeks yeah it has been and I kept being like this must be Braxton Hicks but like no they're way too regular and intense so basically my body's just like this is fun but no baby for you.
As we were doing the ads, Christine was like, I am having a really bad contraction. Like, I went,
take a minute.
So do we record?
Mac and cheese? Mac and cheese?
No, you lost your mac and cheese privilege. Damn that baby clearly doesn't want mac and cheese enough. So
anyway, so it was anticlimactic, but I got to see Em for an extra day, which was great.
Two days.
And we had it was the best week ever. It was the best week ever. I'm so honestly, like, I'm not very good at being emotive, but I just want to say thank you to you and Eva for making me feel so special and loved and happy. And it was just the best possible way to like,
end. I had a blast. It was also fun to visit someone in a town that was kind of definitely a smaller town than LA, where like it wasn't like there were all these events that I felt like we needed to race out the door to. Like it had a very sleepy vibe. I mean, I was also literally with a pregnant woman, but like it felt very much like, what do you want to do? Like, let's just go walk in around Target. It felt very much like being back in Fredericksburg of, yeah, like nothing like is really like expected of us. You can just vibe. And like, I really like just sitting on the couch with you and just watching
TV.
We'd
be like,
that.
Let's go out to dinner and walk around downtown. And we did two ghost tours.
Christine, who is supposed to be like resting, is like now
for that,
did two different 2-mile ghost tours. And then we walked all around a baseball game. It was crazy.
To be fair, they were like, well, if you are having contractions, like, just stay on your feet. And I was like, well, I fucking tried that. It didn't do much. But yeah, we went to a baseball game. We went to 2 mini golfs. We went to Jungle Gyms. Em got to see Jungle Gyms for the first time.
A dream come true, I tell you what. And throw in 2 mini golf games at the end. 2 mini golfs.
Yeah. So it was fun.
It was fun. It was a lot of fun. We watched a lot of reality TV.
Oh my God, we have a new show, everybody. I mean, I've never had like a show, I don't think.
I know. And it's also like not a new one, I don't think.
No,
I think
it's not.
We're very behind, but it's called Are You the One? And let's just say it's a game of strategy. And by season 2, I had already created like a whole graph template on us like strategizing.
My gosh.
It was very fun. By like, we still had 3 episodes left and we already figured out all the answers. It was pretty fun.
Oh my gosh. This is not a joke. So my brother and his girlfriend, they were like, have you seen Are You the One? And we were like, nah. And they were like, it's so trashy. You guys should check it out. And so we were like, all right, let's commit. Let's watch it tonight. And oh my God, in like 3 days, we were already finishing season 2. We were like very invested. And Em was like, step aside, everybody, and open a spreadsheet. And there was like a spreadsheet happening. And I was just
in awe. It worked, by the way. So
if you're
watching that show,
it really was amazing because my spatial awareness, like, everyone knows it's terrible, like, directionally speaking, but, like, my spatial awareness apparently extends to spreadsheets because I was staring at this going, like, you need to walk me through every column and row. I don't get it. Like, my brain doesn't. But Em had, like, I mean, just pages of, like, it was amazing. Anyway, so Blaze would walk in and we'd be like, look at our spreadsheet. And he had to back out slowly. But it's a great.
He was a Capricorn.
Horrible.
The second we said, look at our spreadsheet, he ended up staying. So we were fine.
That's true. He did find it suddenly more intriguing than he did before. But so it was it's a wild show. It's very trash, but that's kind of the point. So
it was a good time.
We had a good time. But yeah, so thank you for coming, Em. I missed you so much.
And it's not the same without you. The cats and the dog, just all they wanted to do was be around you the whole time.
I know. I miss Gio. Also, Mooney and I finally met and we became friends. That's so precious. Yeah. And also, thank you for having contractions in the middle of my story, because now if I make a joke and you don't laugh, I'll just assume it's like the baby's fault.
I'll go like this. And then you'll know.
You'll just like blankly stare at me and be like, sorry, I'm having a contraction.
My whole body is wringing itself out. I'm in slight pain right now.
And That's Why We Drink is sponsored by Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one website platform for entrepreneurs to stand out and succeed online. With Squarespace, it's easy to create a beautiful website all on your terms. You won't want to miss Fluid Engine. This is a next-generation website design system from Squarespace with reimagined drag-and-drop technology for desktop or mobile. And I'll be honest, this is a game-changer. Back when I made the And That's Why We Drink website, I used Squarespace. This was obviously well before they were a sponsor, and we have used them ever since. And it's unbelievable how easy this tool is. Any of us on the team can log in and move some things around, update things. We don't need like a dedicated webmaster to figure it out for us because it's so accessible. I love Squarespace. I've made many websites with it before, and it's really easy to get started. You can get one of their Squarespace professional website templates to use. They have designs for every category and use case. Then you can customize your look, update content, add features to fit your unique needs. It's just a really, really cool service. Head to squarespace.com for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/drink to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Rewind it back to the days of chillaxing on the beach and all-day fun with Spring Break on DraftKings Casino. Play exclusive games like fan fave Rocket. The excitement is endless, the vibes are right, and the cash prizes could be huge. New players start playing with just $5 and get $100 back instantly in casino credits. Download the app and use code ATWWD to book your one-way ticket to fun with DraftKings Casino. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. 21 plus. Physically present in Connecticut, Michigan, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, West Virginia only. Void in Ontario. Eligibility and other restrictions apply. One per opted-in new customer. $5 wager required. Max $100 in casino credits awarded, which require one-time playthrough within 168 hours. See terms at casino.draftkings.com/promos. Restrictions apply.
Okay, so here's my attempt at entertaining you and the baby while it's still nearby.
Listen, I'm living the dream. I'm eating a Cliff Bar, drinking some coffee. I'm having a good time, so don't worry.
I think you're gonna like this story. I wondered if I should keep it for Halloween, and I decided no because I was already halfway through my notes and I didn't want to start over. Also, it has a little bit of like a throwback to the Tooth Fairy episode, which is super fun. We'll get there and then I'll do my little spiel. But this is, what is your favorite type of ghost story to hear, Christine?
I like cowboys.
No, what's your favorite on the level of scary?
Oh, Poltergeist.
Yes.
Oh, Poltergeist scare the absolute bejeezles out of me.
Okay.
Absolute bejeezles.
This is a Poltergeist story.
Oh,
which
boy.
Sounds a little, it can't be real in my mind. We don't find out, but
In the recent weeks, you've been starting all your stories with it's not real, which defeats the whole purpose of our damn show.
It could totally, I mean, every ghost story
can't
I tell
just
could
say
either
it's
total,
real and everyone else can decide.
Honestly, as real as the gospel.
Because I already believe it. So, and I'm usually the skeptic of the group. So,
hey, well, there you have it. It could not be more real.
Okay.
It is from 1695. Sorry. And
those years were very different, so I would be careful.
I know, I need to watch what I say. 1695, and it is a story from Scotland, and it is called the Ringcroft Poltergeist.
Yuck.
It is also known sometimes as the Rarick Poltergeist or the Mackey Poltergeist. Basically, it happened in 1695, but a year later, people really found out about the story because it was published once in London and another in Scotland, but it was published in a pamphlet by Alexander Telfair, and you're going to remember Telfair because he's part of the story, actually. So he ends up basically writing his own experience in this pamphlet called, this is the longest fucking title I've ever seen in my life, by the way. The pamphlet he wrote, where he wrote the story in, is called A True Relation of an Apparition, Expressions and Actings of a Spirit, which infested the house of Andrew Mackie in the parish of Rarick, Scotland, in the year 1695.
Sorry, my audio cut out. Can you say it one more time? Just kidding.
I mean, like, really, like, it was a log line. It was, was the title.
Like, that's like when people are like, you're really over explaining this.
Friend. It's like when you have to hit the word count on an essay.
Yes. So. Oh my God, exactly. You're using the thesaurus and like showing off all your vocabulary.
So it was then, so it started out in that pamphlet in 1696, a year after the actual story happened. And then the story was republished in 1818, so a long time later, in a book called Memorable Things That Fell Out Within This Island of Britain from 1638 to 1684. So it was like history you haven't heard of, basically.
Yeah, I love that.
Fun fact, I did not get a text back from you yesterday when I sent you a particular link.
Oh, shoot. Yeah, I sent you something back and then I realized I never responded to your last thing.
Because speaking of memorable things that fell out of history in an area, at the same time doing these notes, just found out about a memorable thing that fell out of history within my own hometown.
Oh my God, I'm looking at it now. Holy crinol. Should I read the title of what Em sent me?
Sure, yeah.
It's from the Freelance Star, which once, by the way, featured Emothy.
And you.
And oh, I guess I was in it too. Yeah, but it's Em's local paper. And the title of this feature is called A Doggone Good Time, A Look Back at Long Ago Dog Marts. Oh yeah. My goodness. Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. So, I'm in love with this.
Apparently dog marts were, yikes, I don't know how authentic this history truly is, but it was when settlers and natives, it was like a trading mart for them. And I guess, I don't know how pleasant it actually was, but the story that we're running with apparently in this newspaper is that it was a place for the natives to trade furs and produce for settlers hunting dogs.
Oh, wow. But
then over time it became basically like a dog auction for like people to like, and now it's, they still do it. They're bringing it back. I had never heard of this. And then Deirdre sent me this link and was like, did either of us know about this? And I guess it had like two big gaps where it stopped at different points. One was like World War II and then something else, but it officially ended in the 80s. And now they're bringing it back as like a big dog show where there's like dogs who do tricks. And then you can also play a bunch of games. And there's like a huge adoption rescue foundation that's in charge of it, I think.
Okay. So now it's like rescue. It's not like we buy them for...
No, now I think it's like a, like it's much more ethical.
That's fun.
But let me see. There was some little, it went through the whole timeline starting in the 1600s.
Yeah, I'm looking through the years. Like every year they have a different update. This is wild.
Which, by the way, I found out in this that
1698. You're not kidding.
It started in 1698, back when Fredericksburg was called Leaseland.
Whoa.
And then I just wanted to read some of the little things that happened.
Yeah.
So at one point, by the way, like I never heard about this, and it got so big that there was like 15,000 people attending every year.
It said that National Geographic did a spread on it.
Yeah, it was like Bonnaroo, but for dogs. Like, how did
it was actually called Bonnaroo? In case we're wondering.
How did I not know about this? Apparently it's like the biggest dog show or dog event in the country, and still is, or always held the title.
Wow.
Even in the 30s, I'm just passing this one. According to Time Magazine, which holy shit, this was mentioned in Time Magazine, 7,000 people and 642 dogs attended the event. I think in one of these, there was a, like the granddaughter, like the dog granddaughter of the first mascot of Purina Food was like
celebrity
was adopted there. Aww. Then they also said that there was a dog that National Geographic, there was 12 to 15,000 people at one of them. There was one of the dogs, once he got adopted, he ran off, and then they did a whole spread about his like day in the woods before he got found and brought back home. But they had like crazy competitions here. They had like a boy's freckle contest and a girl's what? Pigtail contest. And then they had children literally climb street lamps covered in grease to like.
Okay. Now I'm like, interested. This is
I was like, it's so not okay for today's world, but also I would have given anything to watch a bunch of children climbing grease poles. Like that would have been so fun. Answer.
Remember when you said like, when would you go back to in time with the time machine? I would just go to this dog fair and be like, what the hell am I watching?
Like apparently like this was like a massive thing, and how on earth we never heard about this, I don't know. But I mean, anyway, so if you want to go look up the Fredericksburg Dog Mart, there's like a Wikipedia page. There's apparently it's in National Geographic and Time magazine. So like one of the coolest things to come out of my town, or at least the ethical parts, I'm not sure about how bad the history was. Anytime I see Native Americans in Virginia, I get nervous.
Understandably.
Still sounds pretty cool. So anyway, that was a complete tangent, but I saw memorable things that fell out of history.
And you also wanted to call me out for not responding to your text, which is fair.
I thought that one was really going to get you. So let's get back to the poltergeist. So the first time we ever heard about it was in this pamphlet. Then it was republished in 1818 in this memorable history book. And it is considered, quote, it's considered one of the older spooky stories and, quote, must rank amongst the most remarkable in the annals of Scottish demonology.
Ooh.
So in 1695, this was in Ringcroft, Scotland, which is in the parish of Rerick, which is why sometimes it's called the Rerick Poltergeist. And it was on the Mackey family farm, which is why it's sometimes called the Mackey Poltergeist.
Okay.
And so the family on this farm was Andrew Mackey and his family. Apparently, in this pamphlet, they are mentioned a lot of times as like moral upstanding humans, like did not do anything that would have caused a demon to like show up in their home. And one day it starts out hot. So one day Andrew found that all of his cattle had broken out of their bindings. And he thought that maybe they had bitten out of them or wriggled out of them, but it was weird that every single one had basically fled the barn.
Yeah, like they all suddenly gained the skill to wriggle out of their bindings at once. Yeah.
And so he ended up bringing all the cattle back in, and he tied them up with stronger tethers and tighter knots, but the same thing happened the very next day. So this time, Andrew decided that he was just going to move all the cows from one barn to another and just tie them up there, because he thought maybe the barn was... I don't know. He just was trying out a new thing, I guess.
Yeah.
And so the next morning he woke up thinking, okay, these cows are all going to be tied up in the barn. But now there was one cow who had not only been wriggled out of his bindings, but was tied with new tethers outside of the farmhouse. Like almost as like a fuck you of like, the tethers had been lifted off of whatever post he was on. And then the cow got... drug out and then tied to a different thing outside.
Right. Like the bindings are not the problem here.
Right. But right. The cow had gotten tied up so tight and so on a post so high that he was still kicking in the air. Like the cow had been lifted off of the ground. But that's like the paranormal part of like who the fuck lifted a cow and like it's now just like hanging like for you to find. So that was when Andrew was like, what the fuck is going on? It's not like someone's just like cow tipping in the middle of the night. They're like literally someone lifted a cow in the air and it's like hanging from a tree or something.
Oh my God.
So that was all very odd. And then very quickly after that, they also started having some other experiences within their own house. For example, the Mackey family woke up to smoke one night and realized that their house was on fire. Somehow in the middle of the night, I guess a large pile of like peat, which is like, I think some sort of compost, it was placed in the middle of the house where it's like, who the fuck brought it in? But also why was it directly in the center of the house? And then it mysteriously caught on fire by itself.
Oh no, this is very poltergeisty, all of this.
And very quick, like this guy went from nothing going wrong to a cow hanging in the trees or something.
0 to 300, like
now Scott. His house is on fire.
Yeah.
So soon after this, the family also started noticing that items were moving on their own. And the most constant symptom of this activity was that rocks out of fucking nowhere were getting pelted at them, even inside the house.
Oh, that's always so weird when the rocks somehow get in the house. Yeah.
And it's like they would materialize out of nowhere. Like you'd be in a room, double check that there were no rocks, take a sigh of relief, and then a rock hits you in the face.
Can you imagine every time you want to like read a chapter of your book by the fire, you have to like check for rocks first just to make sure you don't get pelted in the face.
But then have the paranoia of knowing that it will still hit you even though there's no rock. So apparently the rocks getting thrown would be even worse on Sundays, which is kind of creepy, like the day of rest. And when they were praying, the rocks would especially like to target the person who was doing the praying.
That's not good.
By this time, like, weeks had passed, and this activity was plaguing the family. Even the kids were getting hit with rocks now. The kids thought that they were even seeing things, including what they thought was a man wrapped up in a blanket by the fireplace. And I guess one of the kids actually was brave enough to try to talk to it or approach it, and it ended up being just a stool by the fireplace with a blanket draped over it, but nobody had done that, so it either feels like someone in the family is a really mean prankster while everyone's already on edge, or this thing used household items to almost freak you out,
like, yeah,
intentionally wanted you to think someone was
to appear
there
as something else. Yeah.
That being said, all the activity, including the rock throwing, is still happening. The kids are saying that they're seeing things. And eventually, Andrew decides that he's going to seek out the local minister named Alexander Telfair, who is the guy who ends up writing the pamphlet a year later. So Telfair was able to tell the Mackeys that he was not surprised that this stuff was happening because the McNaught family, the family who lived there before the Mackeys did, also said that the property was cursed. So they, I guess the McNaughts, as soon as they moved onto the property, they said that it was just full of bad luck. All of their health declined. The crops weren't turning up. Like, it was just, their farm was not doing well. And I guess in one account, which was also, the pamphlet also said this, so I'm just going to assume this is the truth of it. A few of the articles had different versions, so I'm not really sure which one to follow, but I'm just going to stick with the pamphlet. Once the McNaught family realized that the farm was cursed, they had their oldest son go out to a local psychic, and the psychic said, oh yeah, that farm is for sure cursed. And the I like how she just knew this information.
It's like, yeah, for sure.
She, like, wasn't going to warn anyone who lived there. And so she said the only way to break the curse was that they had to find this stone in the front of the house, and they had to pull it up because underneath the stone was a tooth. And the family would have to burn it to get rid of the bad luck, which is very Tooth Fairy vibes.
Yeah.
Because that whole thing, the whole reason the Tooth Fairy became a thing was you had to bury someone's teeth or burn it or get rid of it in some way.
Or to throw them on the roof.
Or throw them on the roof or feed them to your dog. It would destroy them in some way so that there would be no bad luck.
Interesting.
Which is interesting because that was, this is old time European, and that was when the Tooth Fairy legends, when like the tooth fables all kind of came out. So it was just interesting that I just covered the Tooth Fairy and now I'm seeing it in action.
In action. Love that.
So basically different accounts say different things, but the gist that I was able to catch on to was that the family listened to the psychic. They did go to the front of the house and they did find a tooth there. So in the pamphlet, it said that there was some, I guess this, instead of the son going straight from the psychic back home to destroy the tooth, the son ended up like on the way back home, got recruited by the military. And
wait,
so
what?
It's like very rare. Got recruited by the military. So he had like a friend, like pass on the message for him, like go to his dad's house and like say like, oh yeah, this
wait,
is
what
he you
got
have to
recruited
do
by the military. And they're like, and we're leaving right now.
Yes. That's right.
What?
It does not make sense, but apparently he was like,
here's a bindle since you didn't pack one since you were going home. Like, what are you talking about?
It was like, now that you're being like shipped off to sea or something, I don't
know. What on earth?
But he also had time to like go find somebody who would like be passing through town and get the message to his dad. So Anyway, it doesn't make much sense, but the way that that story goes is when the friend went to go tell the message to the McNaught family that, oh yeah, the psychic says you have to destroy a tooth. Which, by the way, can you imagine if you're a member of that farm and you're waiting for your son to come back and now there's a random person saying your son was deployed in the last like 5 hours and also you have to destroy a tooth under, like, you'd be like, this person is on something.
Yeah. Where did you hide? You kidnapped my child, I think, because you're not well.
So but ended up happening in like the final like nail in the coffin of, oh, the farm is cursed, is when the friend went to the McNaught farm to tell them, oh, you have to destroy the tooth to break the curse, by the time he got there, Mr. McNaught had died from a mysterious illness or something. So it was just kind of like, ooh, they were right. It was still haunted or cursed or whatever. So anyway, that was the story that he ended up telling the Mackey family of like, oh yeah, people have died on the property. This place is super cursed. Apparently the tooth was at some point destroyed, but we don't know by who. But the people who destroyed the tooth said that there was no longer any bad energy here, but maybe now that you're a new family, it became this whole kind of like, maybe it's cursed, maybe it's not. So
right.
I don't think Telfair, the minister telling them the story, I don't think Telfair expected the place to still be cursed, because as far as he knew, the tooth had been destroyed. So he was only going to stay there just to tell them the story and like, maybe do a prayer with them. But while he was there, some rocks ended up getting thrown out of nowhere and the family freaked out. And so he was like, okay, like I'll back stay at with you. Yeah. So he ended up saying that he would stay with the family overnight. And so even though he had only seen a couple rocks get thrown, he wasn't really shaken yet. But when he prayed a second time, all of a sudden he was getting hit with rocks. And on top of that, it wasn't just rocks anymore. Now there was like this staff or cane or something inside the house that was now floating on its own and just whacking him in the head. So he was like, there's nothing here, but now he's praying and there's like a cane hitting him in the face.
I like the ghost of Ebenezer Scrooge is like wandering around being violent unnecessarily.
Well, apparently it was coming down on him so hard that the family could hear the swings coming down at him. So now there's a staff floating around. Apparently it was also hitting the furniture and banging on the floorboards at night. And again, this was happening most often when people were praying. And since he's a minister, he was really getting the brunt of
it.
He's
like, that's all I do is pray. I don't know how to live any other way.
After the rocks and the staff are now the constant and Telfair's living with them, apparently the Mackeys and Telfair also started experiencing a phantom hand going around and hitting them, pushing them, poking them, tugging on their clothes, ripping at their hair. Telfair says that he felt it for the first time while he was mid prayer. And when he looked at it, it was literally like just a disembodied hand on him.
Ew.
And then it vanished when Telfair noticed it. And then the family started seeing a little boy wandering around the house who apparently was around 14 and he wore gray clothes, including a bonnet on his head, which so stylish, cute. Very couldn't be more tan France. I hope there was a French tuck involved. And neighbors who would even stop by after hearing what was going on, they would start getting assaulted now and rocks were starting to hit them and the staff was starting to beat them. And the family was waking up with bruises and scratches on them. They had blankets getting pulled off them. They were getting pulled out of bed. Apparently, one of them had their hair grabbed so hard that they felt unseen nails on the skin. Like someone had like grabbed for all their hair on their
Oof.
Head. They also heard whistling in the middle of the night. No thanks.
Ugh.
And the family was truly just getting dragged all around their house. Their clothes were getting grabbed at. Furniture was flying around. Apparently, it would even shake so much that the house itself would shake. the furniture would shake that the house would shake. There was banging on the roofs and in the walls. And I guess at one point, Telfair was like, this is too much. This is too too big for just me. And so he ended up calling in two other ministers to help him. And by this point, Telfair is now calling this entity the Trouble.
That's and the worst, creepiest name ever.
It's like, that's not helping anyone, Telfair.
That sounds like a horror movie.
So when they showed up, the activity, Kel Surprise, got much worse now that there's three ministers in this house. And the activity was definitely more directed at them. What I thought was funny was one of the first things that happened to one of these new ministers when they came in was during prayer, their wigs got ripped off. And then whenever they were trying to eat dinner, their napkins would get yanked away.
I like that. I like
it's like
that.
You're not going to look respectful.
Your
here.
Civility is gone. Yeah. No wigs, no napkins.
Apparently it wasn't that the napkin itself was getting ripped away, but rocks from out of nowhere were being thrown into their napkin. So it was being flown off away from them or something like that. They wanted the napkins. It was something about napkins this ghost had a real issue with that they were getting yanked away from. So, which makes me think, by the way, that none of the Mackey family uses napkins. Like, for them to all of a sudden have a problem with them when ministers got
there. Well, isn't it the 1600s? Did people use napkins? I feel like that wasn't, like, a very common
maybe it was like
anyway.
What, maybe the thing, like, in your pocket, your jacket pocket
a handkerchief?
Or something? A handkerchief, maybe? I don't know.
Yeah, that could be, because I feel like it wasn't like, oh, let's get the paper towels out. You know?
Yeah, I feel like, true, I don't think they had Bounty around. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I imagine farmers didn't have like handkerchiefs, but maybe like ministers would. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe the guys with the wigs were just a little too fancy for this ghost.
They were like,
you
get the hell out.
Please.
So so they were also getting pelted with rocks, but apparently the rocks that were coming at them were larger than any other rocks before. And they were being, quote, hurled with superhuman force.
Ooh. I could kill ya.
Oh, apparently one of the two ministers was now having bleeding from the head because he'd been getting hit so many times.
Oh.
And the other was having several bouts of mysterious strokes.
Oh, my God. Okay. Yeah, that's bad. Real
bad. It gets even worse because now instead of throwing rocks, we have upgraded to fireballs.
Wait, what?
So apparently there's... Like that peat that they found in the middle of the house that like randomly caught on fire. So now that's happening all the time, but now it's also flying around like the rocks.
Fucking fantastic.
And catching everything in the house on fire.
Why not?
I mean,
at this point,
I would be surprised if fireballs getting thrown around the house weren't catching things on fire.
That's a very good point. It would have been weirder that way. Yeah.
If it just extinguished itself.
Yeah.
It was like, never mind. But can you imagine being a like every time you turn around, like if the rocks are getting thrown around that constantly and now they're on fucking fire, imagine the stress level you're at. Like you are always walking on eggshells.
And you're having strokes every 5 minutes. You're like, this is
people are bleeding from the head. Like your house is shaking. Your kids are seeing a little boy. You're getting your head, your hair ripped out. And now everywhere you turn, something's on fire. You can't even use a napkin.
My napkin is on the floor.
Now you've got like greasy fingers and you're dancing around looking for something.
Can't wipe it in my wig because I just have to put it in my hair. Ugh, gross.
Can you imagine if someone used their wig as their napkin?
Just I'm like, telling you, it would have been better than your own hair. You could wash that thing.
True greaser life. So Telfair called in even more ministers, which means now rocks are
that
getting thrown
smart.
Even harder. And like, learn from your past,
bring
my friend.
Bring in town troublemaker or something.
Right, yeah, bring someone in that the demon can relate to.
Yeah, exactly.
He's clearly intimidated by the amount of ministers. So as soon as he brought in more ministers, more rocks were getting thrown around so hard now that the house is shaking. Some of them are flying into the walls, like getting thrown so hard that they're breaking the walls. Mm-hmm. And as soon as... and then during all of this, Andrew Mackey's wife finds a floorboard that was loose. And when she lifts it up, she found the remains of a body. She found at least 7 bones. Apparently the pamphlet said there was also some flesh left over, which like how fucking old was that flesh and how did it retain any image
of
flesh? And then something else, but it was all wrapped up in like paper packaging. Like,
ew.
So she ends up bringing it to Telfair, but I guess once she lifted it out of the ground, it was technically disturbed remains, and so it only pissed this thing off even more, And it seemed to cause just even more angry fireballs throughout the house. So now it's even throwing rocks that are so hot that they're catching the bed sheets on fire. At one point, there was a fireball that got thrown at the kids while they were sleeping and the bed sheets caught on fire. There was the staff who could forget this cane that's still floating around.
I can't forget it.
It was thrown near the kids so hard that it broke and stuck into the wall. And the neighbors who were still coming in to check on them, which, by the way, neighbors of the fucking year.
Honest to God. or just, like, so nosy, you know?
Okay, actually, now all of a sudden I relate to these guys.
Yeah, I'm like, I probably would be like, I'm just checking in. What's up? I brought a casserole.
I would literally only bring a casserole to see if it would fly across the room when I gave them napkins to eat them with.
I would go to the party store and buy a wig and be like, what happens if I show up with a wig on?
Well, so the neighbors who were there, they were also getting stones thrown at them. And the next morning, by the way, this is really burying a lead. And, like, I don't get any more information out of it. At some point, as the neighbors are getting pelted with rocks, the next morning, Andrew finds a letter that is, quote, both written and sealed in blood. And then that's it. That's all you fucking hear. I was like,
wait, sealed in blood.
Sealed in, like, now blood, dried blood is holding this letter, apparently written in blood.
That is repulsive.
I don't understand. I feel like I missed a big paragraph of an article or something, but, like, all I could see from, like, the writing of the letter was that it was complete gibberish. I mean, it might have been another literal language that I just don't know. Maybe it was like, What's the language in Scotland?
Don't ask me.
Okay,
that.
It's not Celtic. Or Gaelic. That's Irish, right?
I believe Gaelic is Irish.
Okay, everyone.
Don't ask me that.
Okay,
question.
I'm so sorry. I'm a stupid American. But whatever was written there, I could not. It literally did not make any sense to me. I saw the word Scotland in there, which makes me think they are actually full sentences, and I just couldn't read the rest of it.
And it was written in blood?
Written and sealed.
Oh, God.
So Telfair and the other ministers that were with him, they go into this house to pray, and they bring that letter and the bone fragments that the wife found. They bring both of them together to go into the house to pray, and they all get assaulted during the prayer. This is when the Mackey family finally decides that they're going to leave the house.
Okay. All right, finally.
But as soon as they leave the house, which, like, lets you know that there's some, like, weird poltergeisty attachment situation happening, as soon as they leave, the neighbors and the ministers are all like, nothing's happening here. Like, there's no activity.
And the
Mackeys took that as, like, oh, problem solved. And so moved right back in.
No.
They moved right back in. It was like they were gone for, like, maybe 3 days.
No.
So the family, they come back. And, of course, the family keeps getting hit with rocks and fire. And now they're starting to hear this entity. And so whenever it throws fire at them, it says, quote, take that till you get more. Okay?
That sounds like a good song. Take that till you get more.
Ooh. Hang on a second. We'll put that on the album that we release.
Our album that we're, working on right now.
By the way, we're totally doing a...
Spoiler alert.
Paranormal spooky album. By the way, speaking of paranormal spooky albums, I know we already knew this, but I'm allowing myself to still be mind blown anyway. About ZB. But have you... There's one song that Allison and I... recently started listening to unironically because it's so ridiculous. Hang on. Spotify. I'm like trying to find it last minute because I was not planning on talking about
this. How did you both find it?
Well, because I told her, I was like, so Zach Bagans, we were on a road trip or drive. We were in LA traffic, probably. That's our road trip. And we had nothing to do, and so I was
when were you on a road trip?
We were just stuck in good old-fashioned traffic, and I was like, oh, you know, like, Zach Bagans has, like, an album, which, like, it's not really an album. It feels like someone else used a bunch of his clips and put them in front of music, but there's one called, the album, I think, is called Necrofusion, right? Do you know this?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's one that we love, and I forget what I think it's the one called Immortal Portal, and
oh, for God's sake,
it's so funny because I'm gonna completely butcher it, but it's the one wherever he like he talks about Rhonda or like a spirit named Rhonda. If you go find that, that's the one I'm talking about, because it's just his. He's like clearly talking into like a spirit box, or he's doing some sort of like EVP session, and that's the audio clip that they use on top of this like really headbangy like goth emo.
Yeah, he does like hardcore, like it's like not even house music, it's like full-on techno,
like hardcore. Yeah, it's something like weird.
EDM.
Yeah. And so the audio is like him trying to get a response out of a spirit, and the way that he reacts to it, he at the end he goes holy shit, and then there's like this crazy headbanging music afterwards.
What? Why didn't you immediately send me this? My feelings are hurt.
I'm sorry, we'll listen to it afterwards, but just if you go, I think it's Immortal Portal. Please go listen to it. And it's like me and Allison's like one of our favorite songs because it's just so wacky.
Well, you know, my doula said, oh, you should prepare you and Blaze should prepare an album, like a oh my playlist.
God. Do not have your baby playlist. Come into this. Literally, you are the Immortal Portal, by the way. Like, so like, please don't put your baby through that.
Oh my God. But can you imagine? Oh my God.
You are literally, your body is literally a portal for someone on the other side to come into this side. And if you play Immortal Portal while that's happening, that's your baby will for sure come out as a demon. We keep joking.
The baby will be Rhonda.
Holy shit.
Holy shit. Rhonda's here.
Okay, anyway. Please go listen to a Immortal Portal. That's anyway. So that's on Zach's album. Our album is coming out soon. It's called Take That Till You Get More.
Yeah. So Take That Till You Get More.
Holy shit. Okay, so to catch you up, because wow, what a tangent, is they have come back, things are worse than ever, and now they're hearing voices while they're getting rocks and fire thrown at them.
Love it.
So this is now late April, and this all started in February. So this is now months of this shit happening. And now the worst begins. These last couple of days are the worst of it all. Because
now the worst.
Now the worst. Like, what's a fireball anymore? So Andrew now is waking up to voices. And this voice is now saying, thou shalt be troubled until Tuesday. Which basically says, like, I'm only here for a couple more days.
I'm sorry I'm overstaying my welcome, but the end is in sight.
Or it's like the demon's like, even I'm fucking bored. So,
yeah, yeah.
So thou shalt be troubled till Tuesday. And Andrew, I guess, speaks back to the voice and says, like, who are you? What do you want? Basically, this voice tells him that this entity was sent by God to warn everyone to repent for their sins, LOL, or else he will come back 100 times worse for everybody.
Okay, but like he seems pretty damn evil already.
Like, yeah, what's 100 times worse? Like,
and also
everything's...
he doesn't let you pray, so like why is he sent from God? That doesn't make sense.
Uh-huh. Well, they do say that, like, doesn't the demon pretend to be...
Oh, so we're thinking he's full of shit, like he's lying.
Yes, because then he says the quote at the end of all this, he says, praise me and I will whistle to you, worship me and I will trouble you no more. And
worship me, got it. Okay,
so basically saying like, oh, like, yeah, like, you know, pray to me. And so Andrew,
and also God is so totally cool with this, don't
he's
even
like,
worry,
for sure signed off on it.
He signed off. Yeah.
And Andrew basically says, no, I love God, I'm not gonna be tempted by Satan. And then the next day the house is set on fire 7 times in a row.
Oh my God.
So big day for Andrew, but also like kind of a normal day at this point.
But also just the average.
like your typical Tuesday. So the next day after it caught on fire 7 times in a row, it caught on fire again. But this time, every time a part of the house was extinguished, another part would immediately catch on
How
fire.
How annoying.
So it was just like whack-a-mole all day, but your house is catching on fire if you lose the game.
Horribly annoying.
So this led to actually the part of the house, like at this point, so many parts of this house have been caught on fire for months. Like it was bound to happen. But on this day, part of the house collapses.
Right.
And then the next night, one of Andrew's kids gets pulled out of bed and apparently like up a tree.
What?
And hears the voice of this spirit saying, if I had commission, I would brain them. And he kept saying commission in another conversation with Andrew of like, oh, I have commission. Like, I have approval from God. So
how scary.
If I had commission or if I had approval from God, I would brain them. I would kill them.
Oh my God.
So like, and therapy was not widely accessible in 1695. Say. So this poor child.
Yeah.
So now the kids are getting dragged around and hearing that they would get killed if this thing had the ability to. Still all these fires, the house is collapsing, the rocks are still getting thrown everywhere, the cane's getting thrown everywhere, the house is still shaking, the furniture's flying everywhere, and the neighbors are getting assaulted. And the minister now requests that other townspeople join them in prayer, because they're going to create, like, I don't know, Guinness World Records biggest prayer circle, and just like hope that does something. So they have all the neighbors come over, which, like, if you were that nosy neighbor who just wanted to be in on the drama and now you're getting, like, swept into this, like, prayer situation, yeah. I'd be so over it. I'd be like, I just wanted to know. I didn't want to be involved.
No, I didn't ask for this.
So everyone starts praying together. Apparently rocks and now mud are getting thrown at them by unseen hands, all of them at one time while they're praying. Apparently a lot of them get grabbed or literally lifted off the ground. Eventually some of them start noticing that while they're praying, there is a massive black fog materializing in the corner of the room. And it flies out of the house and it catches the shed on fire. But after this event, the activity never came back.
Oh.
And so I guess this was like the world's first exorcism or something. I don't know. Or just like that big of a prayer circle did something. So eventually the house, no more activity came from it. But it was in such disrepair after all of this that the Mackey family moved away. And today the property has nothing on it, but there is one lone tree there that I guess marks where the location of the house used to be. Oh. And so just as quickly as it showed up in our lives, it fucking left. And some think that the activity was just Mackie's kids, like pranking gone wrong, and they had to like keep it up. But imagine being a kid and you're like, now I'm throwing fireballs at Dad. Like, now I'm hanging myself in a tree. Like, so a lot of people try to say it was like the kids or like the voices people were hearing was like ventriloquism or that they were just like little pyromaniacs and had to blame it on something else. So some say that the activity actually came from Andrew Mackey himself being involved in witchcraft, which if you think about it, it was 1695 and that was around the witch trial area.
Yeah.
Others say that the whole story is fake and was used as a scare tactic because it was literally in a pamphlet written by a minister. Sure. So they think like, oh, this is just a scare tactic to convert people to religion, especially during witchcraft era. And that being said, though, it was for a long time, and I guess depending on who you talk to, is still considered a legitimate source on demonology because there were so many ministers and eyewitnesses who vouched for it, according to the pamphlet. but Telfair did end the pamphlet with a quote saying, "Be sober, be vigilant, because your adversary, the devil, as a roaring lion, waketh about seeking whom he may devour, whom resist steadfast in the faith." So,
those are big, heavy hitting words there.
Especially for someone who is looking for proof of God and spirituality and all that. So anyway, most people say it's probably just an allegory or some sort of anecdote written by a minister to convert people. But
That sucks.
Anyway, that is the story of the Ringcroft / Rarick / Mackey poltergeist.
That's fascinating. I mean, I feel like even if, say, it's exaggerated and like only like an eighth of it were true, even that would be wild. Like even so, I mean, I know that's probably no matter what, probably been exaggerated over time because like that's a lot to have happen. But like, I don't know, even if there's a kernel of truth to something like that, I feel like that's pretty crazy.
I do think that, I mean, I guess at this point it's been so many years. There's no one to talk to who's been there. It was literally from before the 1700s. But But yeah, no, I mean, someone at some point, like when it was written in 1696, I would think people at least in 1697 had heard of it. Like, I wonder if it was more fake then because less people could vouch for it versus now maybe it's even more real because we
it's gone down in history. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. And I wonder how much is real. Like, there's no way that it's still completely accurate after centuries.
Exactly.
But then again, a lot of that information came straight from the pamphlet from...
That was written
the year after. Source, so maybe it was actually shockingly accurate.
Maybe,
you know?
Some of it was true. Yeah.
I don't know.
Wow. Fascinating. Well, thank you, Em. Poltergeists really do freak me out. One of the stories, I think this was the one tour we went on without Eva, or I don't remember if it was the one with or without Eva, but one of them they talked about it was the one with Eva, where the guy talked about how we talked about this even last episode, but how the pictures on the walls all flipped toward the wall.
Yeah.
And everything was gathered in the middle of the room. Like, that shit is
Was that Cincinnati or the Kentucky one?
That was a Cincinnati one. That was the one he said. The ghost tour. Yeah. He said we were downtown. That was downtown where that woman was killed. And then the radio host guy lived in her old apartment and
he came back
from a 2-day work trip. And like all his pictures on the walls had been flipped towards that,
which is almost creepier than them. Like, I just have such
me
goose
too.
Cam thinking
it
about
gets
that
me every time.
Just because like, it's not like somehow like the wire or string broke and it fell off.
And
you can't justify it lifting off the nail to turn around
and
then
flip
land.
Around.
Yeah. Mm-mm.
And like, what is the mean, like the symbolism or message behind that is so creepy too. Like,
yeah. It's like either we are we're not enough in the know to understand what it means, or the only point of it was just to it freak you out intentionally. Like, there's no
something sinister
other reason.
It doesn't sound friendly.
It could
sinister.
Mean like it doesn't want your like if your friends and family are the ones in the pictures, like maybe it doesn't want you to look at them or doesn't want them to look at you.
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Super
something
creepy,
creepy
stuff.
Yeah, poltergeist shit is spooky.
Oof.
Wait till there's a poltergeist cowboy, then I will be on board.
I keep looking for one for you. Like, it's at some point, I promise I will do my best at the very
My next birthday, maybe. That'll give you, like...
I need to know, like, what cowboy adjacent is. Like, maybe, what if it's a horse poltergeist? Or, like, what if it's, like a... I don't know. I don't know if there's going to be a full cowboy poltergeist.
All right, fine. We'll let the masses find out for us.
If anyone knows of a cowboy poltergeist, I will cover it. I just have yet to see one.
Okay, let me mark my contraction. All right.
Oh, God.
They're every 5 minutes and 50 seconds right now.
Every minute and 55 seconds?
5 minutes and 50 seconds.
Christine Schieffer. I was like, get in the car.
Well, apparently they told me it doesn't matter what the timing. They were like, oh, the timing between them doesn't really matter as much. And I'm like, why does everyone act like it's the most important thing then? And then, course, they keep saying the thing of, oh, you'll know. And it's like, well, obviously not, because I already went in and they were like, you're wrong.
It would be very cool if your water broke on the show, though. Like, talk about, like, a full circle of, like, starting the show as strangers and now, like, your literal water is breaking.
Every time you say that, I'm like, wow, that would be mind-blowing.
I mean, crazy.
I'm going to FaceTime you immediately because the whole time Em was here, it was like, did your water break? Like, I would literally go to the bathroom and walk in and, like, look at Em. And they'd be like, did your water break? And I'm like, no, you would hear you. I would tell you, trust me.
I was very excited, especially. Oh,
I wanted
baby.
It too. I would have loved that.
I kept like anytime we were watching that reality show, which, by the way, was hours of our lives. We'll never
so
get back.
Many hours.
The last few hours you have left of peace and quiet, you chose to watch like an MTV reality show with me. And
I regret nothing.
I had my face like fully on Christine's belly the whole time trying to pep talk this baby out. I was like, you can do it.
Em was like, get the fuck out of there, you little
I was
rat.
Like, you do not want to start on the wrong foot with
Em
me.
Tried I'm every tactic. Em tried like positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement. Like,
at one point she got the hint because she kicked me in the face.
Directly in the face.
I was like,
give me a little kick. And I was like, you're going to regret this. And then bam.
The baby went crack a towel right in my nose. I was like, wow. Okay. So you hear me and yet you're still not leaving. Why?
Explore new possibilities, pleasure zones, and find your vibe at funlove.com. Funlove.com is a leading online retailer of sensual health and wellness products, offering a wide array of premier brands of toys, lingerie, and accessories.
I know I've talked about it before, but we received the most lovely gift basket from Funlove. First of all, I didn't know what it was at first, and then when I pulled out a vibrator, I thought, oh boy, this is not your everyday fruit basket. There was everything, I'm telling you, from sexy perfumes to toys to vibrators to lube. I mean, I gotta say, it's like a one-stop shop, okay? If you go to funlove.com and you're looking for maybe a romantic evening, either with a loved one or with yourself, they've got what you're looking for, I can promise you. So what are you waiting for? Explore, discover, indulge, and make love fun by visiting funlove.com. And if you live in Arizona or Colorado, check out one of their 18 store locations. Hey, maybe I'll stop by when I'm in town.
And for a limited time, you can save 30% off your first order when you use the code DRINK at funlove.com. Head to funlove.com today and use code DRINK at checkout to save 30% off your first order.
Visit funlove.com today.
We all want our cats to be healthy and happy because, of course, that makes us happy too. But because we're not mind readers, we don't always know when they're unwell. And cats can be kind of standoffish about sharing their emotions and feelings. So helping us keep tabs on our cat's health is just one reason you should use Pretty Litter. Pretty Litter's ultra-absorbent crystals trap odor instantly, so there is no more cat bathroom smell. Hooray! Pretty Litter's super light crystal base also minimizes mess and dust. Plus, the crystals last up to a month, which means less scooping and fewer trips to the garbage can. Here's the coolest thing about Pretty Litter. It changes colors to help monitor early signs of potential illness in our cats, including urinary tract infection and kidney issues. And Pretty Litter ships free right to our door in a small, lightweight bag. This is ingenious, folks. Pretty Litter has been a part of our lives for many, many years. I just think it's the coolest product. It gives you the peace of mind knowing that you can sense something is wrong depending on the color of the litter. And it's so much easier than going to the store and lugging all that dusty litter home. You know how that goes. And the smell. There's no smell. It's amazing. Pretty Litter helps keep tabs on my cat's health and keeps odors down. You and your cat are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do. Go to prettylitter.com/ATWWD and use code ATWWD to save 20% on your first order. That's prettylitter.com/ATWWD, code ATWWD to save 20%. prettylitter.com/ATWWD, code ATWWD. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Oh, okay. Well, I have a story for you today, and it's just fucking awful, so I apologize for that.
Is it a two-parter?
It's a one-parter.
Good. I get all the trauma in one fell swoop.
But it'll be over. By the end of it, it'll be over.
Great.
Until next week when there's a new one. But this, as far as I know right now, is a one-parter. Okay. And this is the case of Moses Sithole, otherwise known as the South African Strangler.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So he has a little nickname. He's also known as being responsible for the ABC murders. So
ABC murders? Why ABC? I guess I'll find
out. You'll find out.
Okay.
So the last nickname of the ABC murders is actually maybe not the most helpful. So we're going to kind of leave that aside because it's actually also the name of a novel published by Agatha Christie in 1936.
Oh.
The ABC murders. So just side note that that's a completely separate thing.
I was going to say, so it's completely not about this.
It's not about that. So usually the South African Strangler is probably more specific, like just him. Nickname. So December 4th, 1997, Moses Sithole was found guilty of 38 murders and 40 rapes. And
whoa.
Yeah. Yeah.
38 murders and 40 rapes?
Yeah.
So that guy is, like, not coming out of jail.
Yeah, he's in trouble.
Oh, my God.
He did a bad thing. A lot of bad things. He was sentenced to jail for, if this answers your question, 2,410 years.
2,000 what? 100?
2,410. 2410.
I like how they just threw the extra decade on there.
Just, like, you, like while we're at it.
Like, I think 2,400 years is enough.
There's no estimating. No. Yeah, we're just going to be very specific.
Yeah.
So 2,410 years. And the sad, other sad part is a significant number of his victims were never identified. So this is just all that we know about. Which
so really no total justice.
Exactly. Like we don't know even what the full extent of it was. So there's not a lot about this online. And there's, again, not a lot about the victims. There were so many, and so many of them are kind of have flown under the radar. So we're just going to try to get as much info as possible. But it was hard to find, you know, really.
Yeah. How did you, if it's hard to find online, how did you find this?
Well, there's definitely information online, but it's just like, you know, they say like 40 victims and like not all of those people are given, you know, a full profile. Like we don't, we just don't know as much as maybe you would know about like
someone with five victims.
Yeah. Right. Well, yeah. Like a more well, I don't know, documented, or I don't know if it's because of the number of victims or if it's because it's just not as covered as some other stories. I'm not really sure, but
okay,
there's only certain victims that we get like a full picture of, and then not everybody. So let's see. Moses Satole, he was born November 17th. That is a Scorpio, isn't it?
No comment.
November 17th, 1964 in Vosloorus, Transvaal. Oh, also, this is in South Africa. And fun fact, not the easiest dialect for me, or not the easiest pronunciation. So if I'm screwing things up, I did look up everything on YouTube, so hopefully I'm saying it right. But if not, I apologize.
Okay.
So the Transvaal province of apartheid South Africa, as one of five children to Simon and Sophie Satole. When he was five, his father passed away, and so with his mom, Sophie, as a single mom, unable to support her children, she left all of the kids at a local police station, and they were from then on homed in an orphanage in KwaZulu-Natal. But after 3 years of what was described as systematic abuse, Moses ran away to live with his eldest brother, Patrick, where he made a living working in the gold mines of Johannesburg. So, tough start.
Okay. Yeah.
Seems to be a pattern.
Started rough. Okay. Yeah.
So as he's working in the gold mines, he's also working other small jobs to earn a living. For example, he liked assisting street kids. This is a quote, to the point of getting them back home. He even ran an organization called Youth Against Human Abuse, which aimed to end child abuse. And yeah, like it seems like a good thing, obviously. And he had this kind of caring personality that made him, let's just say, very attractive to a lot of women, because he had this seemingly empathetic approach to life. And I guess let's say it was deceiving. So
So far he sounds like the organizations and all that, at least he sounds like a good person.
Yeah, it sounds like he suffered a lot and then like came out of it and said like, I'll help other people who suffered.
Right.
And then, like, no, not even a little
bit. And then, yeah, okay.
I don't know what happened or if he was lying the whole time. I don't know.
You really could have gone a lot of directions in terms of setting the story. Yes. And I could have fallen for this guy real quick.
Yeah,
so I'm glad that you didn't do that.
Yes. And we've watched enough reality shows recently to kind of be wary of our initial assessments of people.
Quite true. That is quite true.
So I will say, from my perspective, and like, I don't know, you'll get a better perspective soon, but from my perspective, this is all a bunch, like all a front. This is a front for him to lure people in who find him empathetic and caring.
Got it. Okay.
And he kind of uses his business, quote unquote, to like lure people in. So I think this is all a front, which is almost scarier that you would like intentionally be so empathetic.
Yeah, that he knows what he is capable of, and yet he's still choosing a different route.
Yes, and he's pretending.
Especially because
to be
his argument would be like, oh well, I suffered, and I want to help people who suffered. And it's like, oh well, you're aware that
you're
these self-aware people suffered,
enough. Exactly,
and you know what they must have gone through, and you're still like, it's worth it.
You're like, oh, I'm self-aware enough to know this is what I should be doing or could be doing, but I don't want to, so I'm just going to pretend.
He strikes me as one of those people who's like, oh, I suffered and I'm fine. Look at me. And it's like, yeah, look at you, dude.
Look
like,
at you
it's
making
not
other
cute.
People suffer. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that's exactly the kind of vibe I'm getting from this. It's a little unclear, but that's kind of my theory. So this seemingly caring behavior made him attractive to women. He was actually known to be sexually active starting really young. And as soon as women would begin a relationship with him, he became pretty aggressive and often violent. So his relationships were short-lived. Psychological analysts have seen his behavior towards women as a backlash toward his mother for abandoning him. So that's one of the theories, is that like he he just viewed women as like an extension of his mother. I mean, it's a very classic sure. like Freudian situation here.
Yeah.
That's one of the theories. And so according to one article by Nicole Guisson, in 1987, Satole committed his first sexual assault. He convinced his girlfriend's sister to take a walk with him. Once they were out of sight and where no one could hear them, Satole attacked her. Her name was Patricia Kumalo. She was 29 years old. And although this is the first documented victim, most people believe there were more victims before this that we just don't know about. So
okay.
this
is the first she's on like record. Technically assault one.
Yes, but. Exactly. Right. In theory. So Moses had a routine. He would lure these women, usually between age 18 and 45, in broad daylight, offering them desk jobs at his organization, at his like helping youths get off the street. And so he would offer them a job and then he would assault them.
Yeah, so, well, I feel like that's also a pretty common thing too, of like now you've got this power situation going on where it's like, I'll fire you if you don't.
A dynamic. Well, he would like say, oh, I'll get you a job, come to my business, and then he would attack. Like there never was a job. He would use that as an excuse, which
for them to like come be in his office alone with him. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Okay.
And I think,
yikes, that's still horrible.
Oh, it's horrible. And I think that's why my theory is like, oh, he uses business, because it's disarming to say, oh, I have a business where I'm helping kids. Why don't you come help work for me? And he was very charming, apparently. And so he'd say, like, I'm doing this awesome thing. Come help me. And very disarming. And then,
bam, yeah,
180.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow.
So Moses's string of rapes didn't come to a halt until February 1989, when he threatened a young woman named Buyiswa Doris Swakamisa with a South African machete. And that's actually called a panga. But so he basically took a machete and threatened her. And according to Vocal Media, she did not report the attack until 3 months later when she saw him again standing outside her new workplace.
Oh, shit.
So she was like, that's the guy that almost attacked me. Now I'm going to go report this.
Yeah, now he knows where I am again.
Yeah, like where I work. And he's clearly either following her or trying to threaten her. Who knows? So she reported him to the police, and he was imprisoned in Boksburg prison for 6 years, although he maintained his innocence during the trial. He was in prison for 4 years, and then he was released for good behavior in 1993. And during his imprisonment, Satole met and began exchanging letters with a woman named Martha.
Ah, okay.
So Martha, when he was released, allowed him to move in with her and her family.
Oh, Martha.
Martha,
oh,
Martha, Martha.
Martha. Girl.
Girl. And that was in Pretoria in 1993.
And that means the rest of everything that happens is in the next 4 years, because he ends up getting charged. Or
oh my god, you have such a good memory. How do you remember that?
So actually, when you tell stories, I try to remember the year, because I know you usually start stories by telling me the ending first.
Yeah, like,
and
yeah,
so
right.
Then when you tell me like when the first incident happens, I think in terms
of
the year. I don't.
You're
know
right. 1997.
It's honestly, like, in terms of just, like, podcasting business, I just think of how long the episode might sound. If you say, like, oh, and in 97 he was, you know, sentenced to XYZ, but the story starts in, like, the 30s, I'm like, oh, we got 60 years of story to cover.
Christine's never going to stop talking, I guess.
It's just a way for me to mentally prepare how long to keep my attention span running, you know?
Oh, great. Okay, so now you've only got 4 years worth of attention span for me.
No. I didn't word that right. But I do think in terms of like, oh, I've got this many years to like keep track of. So.
Okay, well, you did a good job, because.
Thank you.
But then again, remember, there were 40 murders. So even though
yeah,
it was only
no,
4 years.
This is about to be a jam-packed four years.
It's a doozy of a four-year period.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Yeah, so exactly. He was released for good behavior in 93. And then as you so astutely recall, 97 is when he gets back in there.
Yes, astute. Right.
So Martha lets him move in Pretoria with her and her family. And Murderpedia describes the lesson that Moses learned in jail, which is just, this is kind of a summation of the next 4 years for him. The lesson he learned in jail was that, quote, rape victims left alive can produce consequences.
Oh, what? Okay. Well, big you yuck. Just kind of told me the rest of the story.
Big there, yuck. So. Well, I told you up front with 40 murders and 38 rapes.
Sure did. But yikes. Yeah. Now that I know that, like, there was. So he is now going into every rape, not just as like, oh, I'm going to do this horrible thing and then impulsively also kill them. It's right. Like, I'm going into this with the intention of they will be
and
dead.
And they're not
the
coming
end.
Out alive. Yeah. Which is just so fucking dark and horrible.
Okay. Great.
Yes. So that is exactly. That's the turning point that happened for him in this first prison stint where he was like, oh, that woman that I left alive spotted me again and turned me in. And that's how I ended up here. So next time there can be no witnesses left alive.
God. Okay.
Yeah. Terrible. So no one knows for sure when he began raping women again, but alarm bells were raised when between January and April of 1995, four bodies of young black women had been found strangled and raped in a town west of Pretoria, which again is where he's living now with Martha. And quickly after those women were found, more rapes and murders were reported in the same town. It's called Atteridgeville. And unfortunately, however, the media didn't do much to cover the case. As the police continued to discover more dead bodies and realize an MO was forming amongst the victims, they realized they were probably dealing with a serial killer. And so to put their theory to the test, the Pretoria Murder and Robbery Unit, is what they were called, created a team specifically established to work on this pattern of murders, uncover whether they were dealing with one or more murderers, and track down the serial killer. So the murders themselves were very brutal.
Didn't you say it was strangling?
Yeah, he was the South African strangler. Always terrible. Basically, the MO involved raping the victim, tying them up, and strangling them with their own underwear.
Oh my God. Holy shit.
Yeah. And so pretty quickly, they were like, yeah, as we suspected, this is a serial killer because the MO remains the same across the board. And then, oh gosh, the body of the 2-year-old son of one of the victims was also discovered.
Oh my God.
And that incited further media coverage, but even that was short-lived. So it was sort of like, that's probably one of the reasons this case isn't as detailed online, is it just wasn't covered as thoroughly as it probably should have been in the media. Whether that was because the victims were black or what, I'm not positive, but that's kind of usually where my mind goes with something like this.
Sure, yeah.
So the media coverage, even when the 2-year-old son was found, was pretty limited.
That's wild. And,
yeah.
That should be the first. That
it's
should be
baffling, right? Like, what?
Also, like, do we know anything psychologically about why he picked someone with a baby? Or was that like he needed a new fix or something?
You know, I'm not sure.
I feel like that's totally like a completely... It's just
was just that she happened to have a kid with her and he was like, well, it's another witness is my guess, because his whole thing was getting rid of witnesses.
I didn't know if he had like all of a sudden like just killing women wasn't enough. And so,
I mean, I don't think so, because that was the only one.
Okay.
So I don't think that was like an escalation that went on. I think that I just was one of the things that added media coverage when there was like none.
Sure.
So yeah, I'm not positive, but it doesn't seem to happen again. So,
wow.
According to various articles, over time, police noted that whoever was doing this was evolving their murder technique to extract the greatest pain from their victims, which always gets me. Assumedly increasing their own pleasure by doing so.
Whoa. Yeah.
The killer's means of approach was also clarified, because in a significant number of cases, the victim had been apparently meeting someone who had promised them a job. So this is the same thing again, where he's saying, oh, I have a job for you. Why don't we meet up? And
like,
I'll tell you more
about it. He hasn't
tried
a new strategy at all.
Yeah, this one seems to be working for him. So he keeps doing that. And so people who knew the victims would say like, oh, yeah, she was on her way to a new job meeting. So it was also reported that in some of the murders, the killer would later call the victims' families just to taunt them for fun, which
that's sick.
Sickening on like, top of everything else.
Like, duh, by the way, I know I'm not saying anything new, but like, that's just like a whole extra level of twisted.
It is completely. So September 16th, 95, a police officer who had been out hunting rabbits was suddenly hit with an awful smell, and it turns out he had stumbled upon a mass grave.
Oh.
Yeah.
Whoa.
So when this grave was discovered, it led to more mass graves being discovered nearby. And one of them contained 10 bodies with varying degrees of decomposition.
So he had been going out to the same spot over and over and burying. Which, like, by the way, like, if I mean, again, clearly I don't think like a killer. But, like, if I were to kill, like, I would live in constant fear if I picked the woods as the burial ground of hunters, like, and hikers. Like, people are out in the woods all the goddamn time. Like, it's not as secluded as you think.
Yeah. I mean, I have, like, feel mixed about this because I feel like there are so many times where people do go missing in, like, wooded areas and they're just not found for, like, decades because, it, like, if you know the place to go, it can be really secluded.
I guess he didn't know the right place.
Well, he did because he ended up putting 40 bodies there before anybody found it.
Oh, you know 40? What I mean?
Well, there were multiple mass graves and
this one
alone had 10 bodies, so clearly...
I guess he was onto something.
For a while, it was working. For whatever
I would
it's
just,
worth.
I would just live in fear. I mean, if, literally.
But also, I think
put a body anywhere.
I know, but one of the I just read a book about psychopaths. They don't really feel that fear. There's not like a fear there. It's like, you know what I mean. There's not really a guilt. There's not a fear. Like, we don't have that same mindset.
In that one way only must be nice of like not having just constant anxiety.
Yeah, but it's sort of like an overpowering like, oh, I'm good enough to not get caught sort of attitude. And so I think they wouldn't sit in that fear. They would be like, well,
I guess that's fair.
Everyone's too dumb to figure me out. Yeah. Yikes. Big yikes. So he found this mass grave and then nearby there were several more. And comparing the bodies, police quickly knew this was the same person, obviously. And this is when we have a new character alert. It's a woman named Mickey Pistorius, and she was South Africa's first ever profiler, the first woman in her field, and the aunt to a convicted murderer named Oscar Pistorius. She is quite a character. Her nephew is a convicted murderer. She's the first woman in her field of profiling, and she's South Africa's first ever profiler. So she's like a big hitter.
I wonder which came first, her nephew being a killer and then her becoming a profiler, or her becoming a profiler and awkwardly having to study her own nephew.
I'm pretty sure the crime came first. I remember I read a profile on her. This is now weeks ago since we're prepping everything in advance. So I'm like totally didn't write it down. But yeah, it was an interesting story how she kind of got into the field. But the case had now turned into a case of national security because of this serial killer. And so the president at the time, you may have heard of him. His name is Nelson Mandela. He's pretty well-known bloke. He visited the site where the bodies were found and pleaded for people to help with the investigation and stop the killer once and for all. And this is now when the media storm finally blows up and locals are terrified. It's obvious that the South African police had never dealt with someone working on such a massive scale. And now local authorities are under like massive amounts of pressure to get this solved. So they bring a retired FBI profiler named Robert Ressler on the case. So Ressler arrived in September of 95. So he and now Mickey Pistorius are like a duo, like working side by side to try and figure this shit out, which is sounds like a good
couple?
TV show.
Potential power couple?
I mean, at least in a career way. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not here to speak on their romantic interests, but at least on a career front, they are a power duo.
Love it.
Yeah. So let's see. He assisted with the development of a profile of the serial killer, and they decided that the killer was an intelligent, organized individual with a high sex drive, operating with a growing sense of confidence. And perhaps with the assistance of a second killer. So they weren't sure if it was one or two people.
Interesting.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of interesting too. So as Ressler and Pistorius were profiling this killer as well as investigating the site, they found some new critical information. One of the women who was found, her name was Amelia I tried so hard to find the pronunciation of this name. Rapodile, I think it's pronounced. Had been spotted going to an appointment to see a man called Moses Sitole on September 7th. Somebody she told, this guy's name is Moses Sitole, and this person remembered that name. Thank God.
Interesting he would use his real name.
I thought so too.
Yeah.
Maybe it's this growing confidence they said he had. He just didn't give a shit. I don't know.
I guess so, yeah. Or, yeah, I don't know.
I was surprised too. So doing some digging into this, authorities were able to find the job application and offer, and they found that Amelia was not the first victim to have been offered a job by this man, Moses Satole.
Wow, this feels almost like a really easy case once they had his name.
Once this one break happens, exactly.
Yeah, it seems like they really got everything they needed.
They're like, oh, Moses is just out here offering a bunch of women random jobs.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So as soon as they were confident that he was a suspect, they tried to locate him, but at first they had trouble finding him. Unfortunately, while this is happening and they're trying to figure out where he is, he's continuing to hunt and murder women. The next body they found was that of Agnes Mabuli on October 3rd of 95. And strangely that day, a newspaper called The Star received a call from a man who claimed to be the one responsible for the murders. And when they dug into his identity, he seemed to be able to provide details about the murders that weren't public knowledge, which is always like kind of a big red flag.
Yeah.
And so when they hear this, they're like, okay, I think we found him. So they set up a meeting with the caller, but he never showed up. So it's weird. It's like we're still unclear whether that was him because he never showed up.
Sure.
But like he seemed to know a lot about the murders that weren't public.
So yeah, it's at least fishy. Sure at least fishy.
Like, why would he be doing that? Just because he's so confident and like cocky? I guess if he's taunting the families, maybe he just taunting the newspaper? I don't know.
Yeah, it has to be something about his... There's got to be some, I'm guessing, some sort of narcissistic tendency there of like, I can like get away with literal murder and might as well even give you some information.
Want the attention for it?
I might as well literally feed you information since you're so stupid you can't figure it out on your own or something.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's so weird because like we don't know if it was him or if it was a prank call, but I imagine it must have been him.
Can you imagine if it was a prank call though and that guy was just like weirdly accurate about shit?
Just like knew the secret information. Yeah, exactly.
Just like spewing bullshit and like actually kind of nailed it on the head. On something. Like now he's like, whoa, it was a joke, everybody.
It's like,
I was teasing,
which it's like not a funny joke, but yeah.
Yeah.
You're right. I think it's probably him. And since he was taunting the families all the time, like maybe he just had like some fucking attitude problem and was like, I want attention. So at this point they're like, all right, this is the guy. When the guy didn't show up, the police released a wanted newscast looking for Moses Satole. So now publicly they're telling the world like, we need to find this guy, Moses Satole. So during this time, Moses had been in touch with his brother-in-law looking to get a gun for protection. Ooh. So in the call, the brother-in-law agreed to meet with Satole and he's like, yeah, I have a gun for you. And then as soon as he hung up, he called the police and was like, I'm meeting with him to give him a gun.
Right, right.
So I know where he is, which is like, whoa, what a badass. Thank God.
What a badass. And also, like, I like how the gun is, quote, for protection when we all probably know, like, the gun is, maybe the strangling's good. It's not about to be strangling anymore.
It's like, for protection. Wait a second. Like,
who do you need protecting from? Yeah.
Right. So the brother-in-law's like, sure, yeah, sure. I'll meet up with you. And then he calls the police and is like, we're meeting on this street corner or whatever. So according
way to go.
I know. Thank God. So according to an article on Vocal Media, Satole's brother-in-law said, okay, let's meet at a factory. So the police then, this is like a fun little heist situation, not a heist, but like a fun little like.
A quest, an adventure.
An adventure, a secret little plan. You know, I love a secret little plan. So they're like, all right, we're meeting at this factory. And the police are like, great. So we're going to replace the normal security guard with a police officer who looks like a normal security guard so that he doesn't think the police are there. And so when Satole arrived, he became kind of uneasy and attempted to flee. And the police officer was ready for this. So he took chase. And apparently Satole obviously didn't have his gun for protection yet, but he did have an axe.
Thor? Are you kidding
me? I know. He had an axe. Why not? So he swung at the police officer, and in response, the officer fired his gun and hit him in the leg and stomach. So he has now been incapacitated.
Okay.
He is transferred to the military hospital in Pretoria, where he's treated and eventually confessed to the murders and admitted to police he thought there was a copycat murderer at large who was using his MO to kill people. which I imagine probably ticked him off of, like, someone else is using my, I don't know.
Whatever.
So 5 days later, on October 23rd, 95, Moses Sotole was charged with 29 murders. And on November 3rd, he was transported back to Boxburg Prison, where he had served that initial rape sentence like a few years ago.
Home sweet home.
Home sweet home. They remember him well. Yep. During this time, press reports stated that he was HIV positive. And his trial began October 21st, 96, with the charges against him being 38 counts of murder, 40 counts of rape, and 6 counts of robbery. He pleaded not guilty to all of them. Okay. Wow. Okay, guy.
Yeah, right. Also, did he end up dying? Did it ever turn into AIDS?
No, I don't believe that's, so.
I mean, random question. I'm trying to remember. Because I first originally got super mad that he like clearly had HIV and was spreading it to women. But then in my mind, I was like, oh, and he's killing them anyway. So I don't know.
Right. True. Fair point. I mean, fair point. Like,
because if they were surviving and now he's also just like knowingly spreading HIV to people.
50 people or whatever.
Yeah.
No, I don't believe it. Well, I will get there in a few bullets.
Okay. Sorry.
No, you're good. It's a fair question, especially, like, I mean, we all remember the fake HIV fucking report from what's-her-name's story. Horrible. Okay, so the prosecution had a pretty straightforward case, obviously, and with a collection of witnesses, including some of the early rape victims that he didn't kill, like that woman Buyiswa Swakamisa, it made for a really morbid trial. With each murder and rape victim, they went through Moses's tactics of luring women in with his employment offers when actually he was priming them for murder. They also went through evidence of how each of the victims was found and how they were murdered. So it was like just very graphic, very brutal, probably very traumatizing to sit in on, especially if you were one of the early victims and then you had to watch.
Are you kidding?
Description of everybody after you. I mean, horrifying. So December 3rd of 96, according to Crime and Investigation, the prosecution introduced a video that had been shot during Sotole's initial incarceration in which he candidly admitted to 29 murders. He described his technique in detail, although he claims that he began killing only in July of 1995, selecting his victims for their resemblance to the rape victim, Buyiswa Doris Swakamisa, whom he regarded as responsible for his first jail sentence. Ugh. So to describe that in a more clear way, that first woman, Buyiswa, who was the one who called him out a few months later and had him sent to prison, he said he killed all these other people as revenge against her because they looked like her.
And can you imagine the guilt that poor woman put on you?
Yeah.
It's like, I mean, it's your bullshit. Fault. Like, it's bullshit. But can you imagine hearing that?
Being like, wait, what? Yeah. Putting that on me? Yeah, exactly. And so
also, if anyone ever confidently said that they killed 29 people, I'd be like, that's so confident that I feel like that's like there's. I feel like you're saying that too confidently because there's actually a bigger
number. There's more
number,
to the story.
That's the amount you're comfortable with.
He's like, sure, 29. Let's go with that. Right.
And it's like, I feel like if you say 29, I'm just going to immediately assume 50.
Like just double it. Right.
Just because, like, you need to at some point feel shame. Like, that's right.
You're a psychopath. Again, they don't feel that.
In my head, I would feel some sort of.
Well, you would. I would.
I didn't even do anything and I feel shame. Yeah. So anyway.
Yeah. So his whole excuse now is like, oh, well, they looked a lot like this woman who sent me to prison 4 years ago or to jail 4 years ago. So that's why I did it. And it's like, that's the worst excuse ever. It's not even an excuse, but like, what are you talking about? Mm. So he said they resembled her and that's why. And so there was a delay because this tape, the legality of whether it was allowed to be introduced as evidence was questioned. And because they weren't sure if it was recorded, because it was recorded illegally in a jail cell. So they were like, is that admissible or not? So there was somewhat of a delay. But finally, the judge was like, yeah, fuck it. It's admissible. It's part of the evidence. Thank God.
Okay.
So the prosecution rested its case August 15th of 97. And the defense's whole standpoint was that Sotole didn't have anything to do with these incidents. So this is his defense team is arguing. He had nothing to do with these incidents because he was innocent.
Oh, okay.
I know. I forgot to tell you that part, and that changes everything.
I this whole time thought he was guilty.
Yeah, okay. I know. It's hard. It's right. Like, it's really tricky. it's very complex.
I'm glad I have you on my side.
To lead the way and say, yes. Guess what? His lawyer yep. says, well, he's not guilty. Why? Because he isn't. So they're like, oh, shit. No wonder.
Right, okay. Right.
So that was literally all they had. There was nothing they had to present to be like, oh, he had an alibi or he's a good guy. There was like nothing they had. So obviously that didn't bode well for him. He also took the stand, which didn't end well for him either, because he just went on rambling and incoherent statements. Didn't help him any. So December 4th of 97, this was more than a year after the case had commenced, Moses Sotole was found guilty on all charges. It is said that because of the sheer amounts of counts he was being charged for, it took 3 hours to read the verdict.
Whoa.
Because of the number of victims.
3 hours?
Yeah.
Wow.
So like for each victim, it would be like what he was found guilty of, how long he was being sentenced for. Horrifying. Wow. So his verdict was so long that the sentencing had to be postponed until the next day. And the following morning, the judge, despite commenting that he had no issue in sentencing Sotole to death, actually sentenced him to 2,410 years in prison. But don't worry, he has the possibility of parole in 930 years. So
okay.
We'll see.
That's funny.
Oh,
that's
I know, isn't that wild? It's like,
very
thanks.
Silly that they even gave him a chance.
Thanks.
You I mean, have a little bit of parole.
I always wonder, like, what if they, like, develop some technology and all of a sudden we are alive for, like, 3,000
I think about
years.
That, too. I'm like, what if
then what?
All of a sudden time really means nothing?
But it's I guess like, that's why they do it. They're like, we'll stick to 2,000 years and hopefully.
Honestly, if you can't, like, no, I was about to say, and it sounds tasteless, so never mind. I was gonna say, like, if you survive 2,000 years, like, at that point, like, go on and be free. But, like, nah. Like, no. At that point, let's make it 4,000 years.
Let's
you know?
Go to 2,410, and then we'll talk.
Maybe around 5,000, since we threw that extra decade in last time.
We might
time.
As well just double we'll just, the whole thing.
Just do another, yeah. Why not? Sure. Just throw another century on next time.
I would say that's our call.
Definitely. Yeah, when you're that nasty, let's just keep adding years
just
until
keep fucking adding.
You actually until time actually does stand still.
I'm fine with that. Yeah, glad we're on the same page. So, Sotole was put in Pretoria Central Prison, where, shocker, he's still serving time to this day. It is said that because he's in prison and has access to good treatment, this is kind of back to your question earlier. His HIV condition is being treated better than it would have been if he was out of prison. So he has access to better care now than he would presumably if he were out of prison. So according to True Crime South Africa, quote, outrageously, police allegedly did not inform Moses's common law wife, Martha, of his HIV status. And she had to find out from a newspaper article.
That's what I was afraid of. That someone got to someone.
Yes. And unfortunately, she and her daughter were both tested and were also found to be HIV positive.
Oh, his daughter too?
Yeah.
Holy
I know.
Fuck.
Why does this keep happening in these stories where they're just like, oops, we forgot? It's like.
Also, I mean, this is like, I don't know, maybe it's not neither here nor there, but was he ever casually just plain old fashioned cheating on his wife and just sleeping with someone and walking away? Or was every time he had sex ending in killing?
You know, I don't actually know. And there were so many victims that like. Because there were dozens, and it's like that's the 40 rapes are all we know about, but most people believe there are more. So it's like hard to believe he would even have time to be having an affair on top of everything else. You
right.
Know?
Right. I was wondering if there's anybody
no
else that could have it could have yeah. spread to someone else.
Right. Who's
know,
alive?
So.
Yeah. There's no info on that I could find. but it is a fair question for sure. Because right, that would have lasting impact, obviously too.
For sure.
So anyway, that's the story of Moses Sotole. Pretty fucked up. I'm sorry. I actually was going to record that one last week, but then you came to town and I was like, I'm going to switch it up and make it like not this one for a while
really,
in person.
I was worried that once I showed up and like, I was like, maybe she has to do her notes tonight. And I completely threw that wrench
no,
in.
No, it's
so.
Fine. I thankfully was prepared to do a separate one. And flipped them. So I was like, gonna do this one. And then as I was reading it the day before, I was like, this is just gonna be, I mean, they're always a downer. Don't get me wrong. But like, just this one's heavy on.
I had to do, I was doing my notes on, in the hotel. Cause I saw you straight from Denver.
Right.
And so when I was in the Denver hotel, I had like some late night thing I had already signed up for and I ended up having to cancel last minute because I was like, if I don't do my notes in this hotel room, I'm never going to get them done in front of Christine.
So We never do.
So, but in that moment, I was thinking too, like, oh my God, like, I'm not giving her any warning that she needs to do her notes in advance. And if I say anything, it's going to be so obvious what's happening. Anyway, we figured it out.
Listen, we always do, okay? We always wing it somehow or another.
Always by the skin of our teeth, yep. But we always do. So
100%.
Well, since it's 39 weeks, technically, do you have a different size of your baby or is it just the size of a baby?
No, because this time it's 39 weeks now, but when this comes out,
it will be the size of a much bigger newborn.
Will hopefully be here. Please, dear God. I don't think it'll even be possible at that point.
Yeah, it won't even be the size of a newborn baby. It'll just be a baby.
Right.
At this point.
Correct. Yeah. Exactly. So we'll see. Check Instagram. I don't know if I'll post on there, but if I do, that's where it'll be. So
yeah, it's probably weird for people to hear this once the baby's already here.
I know.
And we're just living in la-la land.
It's probably
land,
weird
so.
For me to hear. Yeah, I don't know. It's going to be trippy. This is probably the trippiest of like future past things in my life. Anyway. So
look, we'll see. I told you this year you would meet your children and you had all the things to say about it and now we're proving it right.
To be fair, last year I tried and it really didn't work for me.
Okay, fair.
So
fair.
But I didn't want to get my hopes
is the
up.
Year. 2021 is the year.
You called it this year.
It's the year of sandwiches and the year of babies. So
oh man. We had a fried chicken sandwich. We had some sandwiches.
Oh, we had some good sandwiches. I'm always wondering. I learned Christine loves a good bagel sandwich. I mean,
sorry,
I already
knew
that, but it's carried over to Kentucky.
On the last day, I kind of ruin Em's life by getting like a trout salad and horseradish bagel sandwich.
I was like, you want me out of here. I get it.
I want the baby out. I'm trying anything.
Anyway, well, I'm glad that you're, I'm manifesting this, but by the time this comes out, I'm so happy to know that your baby is here and healthy and a bouncing little babe.
So.
And so sweet and so cute. And I've seen the pictures on Instagram. It looks amazing.
Oh,
looks
you've seen like more than pictures on Instagram. You'll probably be FaceTiming me as
I feel
like.
I've seen a video of your cervix or something at this point. So. Okay. Well, that's all I've got.
Me too, man.
Okay. What are you going to order for lunch?
Great question. Well, here it's dinner time almost. So,
Great
question. Maybe some Thai. What about you?
I'm looking obviously at the factory.
The CF.
Yeah. The CF. Big CF.
Maybe I'll change my mind and do that too.
Well, me and my future full belly of cheesecake wish you and everyone listening a
and
pleasant
my full
week.
Belly.
I hope you all have a great week and you are loved and
you are safe
stay
and
hydrated.
You are loved and drink some water.
You're a loved, wanted, safe. Yes.
And hydrated.
Okay. And?
That's
why
we
drink.